Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace coming at you on a Friday morning. Hi, everybody. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. Nick Frazier back behind the glass.
Frazier.
Coming at you on a Friday. Caroline is out today.
Big sister is out, and we're going to have fun tonight, boy.
Not that we don't have fun when Caroline's
exactly.
Here.
Oh, we're putting our feet on the desk.
Oh, yeah.
We're not washing dishes. We're not doing anything. Man, I'm leaving the front door open. I'm doing everything.
We're getting takeout food tonight.
Exactly. Oh, man. I'm doing everything tonight, boy.
Woo-hoo. Oh, boy. Yes. We have free reign. Free reign of the territory. Okay. D-Mace, I saw a great movie last night. I was on this movie early. I wanted to go in and see. I don't go to the theater that much, just like most of us, right? We don't go as much as we used to. But Oppenheimer.
Yes,
I'm going to give it a high praise. It was hyped up a lot, but it lived up to the hype. I'm saying all in. Go see it.
I'm going to see it. I wanted to go see it with my son, but I don't think he's going to go to the movies. My daughter, she very seldom go to movies anymore because of all the madness that has happened in the world with stuff.
Man, yeah.
So she's a little leery about going to the movies.
Just the anniversary the other day. Maybe it was yesterday on the movie theater in Denver. That was, 11 years ago, something like that? I saw it just happened. That popped up on the news. Like, wow, I remember that day. We all do.
But I do want to see Oppenheimer because it seemed like it's filmed sort of like, and I mentioned this to Willie, which he hadn't seen, and I was blown away. Inception is sort of, I think it's filmed like Inception in a sense. It's not Inception, but it's filmed in that sort of cinematic
That viewpoint way. Of the cinema, cinematic way.
That's the way it seems like it. But it seems it's a drama, but
yeah,
it's without telling the movie.
I don't want to give it away, but it's obviously a historical piece on the Manhattan Project, the building of the atomic bomb, all that goes into that. Mm-hmm. It's really well done. It just makes you think. It'll spark a lot of discussion.
Ooh.
Christopher Nolan. You know, he did Dunkirk, The Dark Knight.
He's a great director to
start with. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, he did Inception too.
Yeah,
so that's the connection there.
Exactly.
So, I don't know, Nick. You didn't see it last night, did you?
I did not.
Just opened last night. It was all the theaters were very crowded.
I'm sure it was.
Night. I think it's got the. If you go into Rotten Tomatoes, it's the high 90s. You know, you will not be disappointed.
Well, people go on the text lines and tell us if you saw it last night, and if you did, what did you think of it? Don't give the movie away. Don't give the movie away. Just rate it, 1 through 10. How did you like the movie if you went and seen it? Willie gives it, I believe, a 10.
I'm going to give it a 10. Yeah.
How do they do it on Rotten? Rotten
Tomatoes. 100.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
It's in the high 90s.
Yeah.
So Rotten Tomatoes. I always tried to figure this one out. Because I didn't know when I first started noticing Rotten Tomatoes, I thought it was a bad thing. And when they ranked it high, I'm like, man, that movie's not good. But then come to find out.
Like you would think you don't want a lot of tomatoes. That's like the old image of people throwing tomatoes on the stage, right?
That's why I thought at first it was a bad thing.
No, if you get the rotten green tomato low rating, that's not good.
Yes.
That's how that works.
Yes.
But it's good. And we had a Tom in Nashville pointing out Inception. Oppenheimer, the Christopher Nolan crossover there. Yeah, he's a great director. Mm-hmm. This one will not disappoint. It will
Perfect.
Not disappoint.
Well, I will
How long was the movie?
It.
3 hours. It's 3 hours. So
okay.
Be ready. Be ready.
Be ready.
Hey, you might want to order a T-bone steak at the movie theater.
Yeah,
do that now,
Get a little caffeine in you if you're older and you are prone to falling asleep. But I think it'll keep your attention, right, unless it's like nap time when you go in there or – you go to the 9 o'clock show. You're going to be in there.
You're going to be in there for a minute.
But it's great. So 94 on the Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
What I'm looking at.
So it may overtake Mission Impossible, which I need to see as well.
I need to see that too. I haven't been big into that franchise, but I heard this one's really good.
Yeah.
I heard this is a good one.
Yeah. So.
Okay. All right.
I might need to go see those two movies.
Yeah. And listen, we're going to get the text line going today because it is Dad Joke Friday.
Some jokes with me today.
Okay, so our text line, of course, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You can call us as well. You can go old school. Call the phone. Hey, we're a little older. We take phone calls.
We can take
it
all.
Yeah, 615-737-1025. You can get your movie review in. You can give us a dad joke. And, of course, we're going to weigh in on a lot of things today, including the Kevin Byard restructuring pay cut. He did, at the end of the day, take the pay cut. We're going to talk about that this first hour a lot. We've got Ask D-Mace today. We've also got, of course, the Take It to the Bank. So 615-737-1025. So, D-Mace, do you want to get the show started with a good dad joke?
You know what? I have one. And I had one, a friend of mine sent me one, and I was just cracking up, but I got to find that one. So let me scroll.
Oh, in the scroll. You're looking in the scrolls today. He's got the scroll with all of the wisdom of life of D-Mace. He's got it in the scrolls.
D-Mace, okay. Are you one of those people that has like a joke book?
I mean, I got a scroll, man. It's called
a scroll.
It's called my scroll.
The scrolls of life. The scrolls
okay.
of life.
Here's one. Okay. The dad's talking to his son, right?
Okay.
All right. Here we go. The dad says, I removed the wheels of your car. The son said, why? The dad replies, so you can drive tirelessly. Y'all like that one. Come
okay,
on.
We're going to start off. I don't know. I that's not your A material from the Scrolls. The Scrolls have had better jokes before. At least to start the
show. So that was about a 50 on the Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay. 50, tirelessly.
Dang it.
Man. Okay. All right. We'll get it going. We're
going. That was a hit, man. I thought
but,
that
you know,
was a hit.
This is the beauty of our show. If one of us tells a dud dad joke, somebody's going to pick us up with a good dad joke on the other. Like Cody in Portland. Where do pirates buy their hooks?
I don't know.
The secondhand store. Okay. See, we're gonna.
I like that one. I like
that.
People
are gonna leave here with good material. That's, you know, when you go out into life on your Friday night, go to your weekend, you're gonna be armed with a couple of good dad jokes for your group. Whether that's with your family, you're out watching a game with the fellas, or you know, you're on the golf course, whatever you do on your weekends, you got a couple good dad jokes in your pocket. That's a good thing.
Absolutely.
And you can weed out the bad ones. And you keep the best material.
You always got to have a good dad joke in your pocket. That's all I got to say.
It's good. It's a good thing.
It's like keeping cash on hand. You got to have a $20 bill on you at all times, right?
You should.
I don't.
Those days are numbered now. It's like less and less situations you get into where you have to have the cash, but you never know when that's going to happen. Oh, sorry, we only take cash. If you're that store, you're kind of old school. And I kind of respect like the old school restaurants sometimes that still are just cash only. There's some classic old restaurants you run into in every city. Like, no, this is how we roll. Like, you know, when you come here, you can't bring the credit card. And the new people that don't know, they get all flustered and whatever. Hey, there's an ATM right over here. What ATM? You guys don't take cards? What are you guys doing? But the owner's secure enough in their history. And they're like, no, this is how we roll. Forget it. You don't like it? Don't come back. We're good.
Hey, either way.
Green paper or no thanks.
Got the ATM right over here?
Oh, man.
All right. So, D-Mace, the saga is over. And I will say this. On the Titans, I feel like now the hay's in the barn.
Yes. In regards to...
into all of the issues that we've been discussing all summer. Back in March, it was Kevin Byard. It was also, hey, when's Jeffrey Simmons going to get done? And there's the whole draft. And are they going to, you know, they're going to draft a quarterback? Well, they got a quarterback. Are they going to get D-Hop? Well, there was a long saga, and they got D-Hop. So it looks like everything's done. This is the team.
Well,
right?
It looks like
because
it,
here's the last piece. The Kevin Byard thing has resolution. He did take a pay cut. I looked at CBS Sports. This is the first place I saw this. Tyler Sullivan. And it says he is restructured. He has taken a pay cut down from $13.6 million as his base down to $11 million. But he does get incentives that could get him back up near $14 million. So he does the Titans a solid, gives them a little extra cap space, presumably to get D. Hopkins in comfortably, right, and still have your budget, not screw up your budget this year. But he bets on himself to where if he's his normal Kevin Byard, plays great, stays healthy, he can still make his money. So, and Kevin Byard can say, look, I'm helping you out, and hey, look, I want to win. And DeAndre Hopkins can help us win. I'm facilitating getting a really good player on our team. And look, at this stage of my career. I'm year to year. Mm-hmm. I want to finish as a Titan, so let's make the Titans the best they can be. The Titans get a break of $2.6 million this year. Incentives can get rolled over into next year. Mm-hmm. And I would think, just like DeAndre Hopkins has a lot of incentives. Yeah. But if you make those incentives, I think you're, if you're the Titans, you're happy to pay those. That means the guy had a good year.
Yeah, I think Kevin was in a no-lose situation here. And I think I mentioned this when all of this sort of came down with KB and them asking him to take a pay cut and him saying no. He was going to get that $14 million. He was going to get it either way, whether it be with the Titans or whether it be with another team if the Titans chose to release him, which I – couldn't see them doing. I could see a trade, but not a release. Because my thing was, you know, if you don't want it, if you don't want this to be a large cap hit for you Titans, then you rework the deal, or anybody else, you rework the deal, give them half of it in a base salary and give them some in signing bonuses or incentives, easily achievable incentives. And I'm sure that is what the Titans have done. They gave him incentives that he can reach easily, probably.
And that's what we don't know, but I would like to see that. Hopefully they are achievable for him, because you want to see him. Like, I do hope that this was a win-win, right? Mm-hmm. That Kevin Byers, okay, if I'm going to take a $2.5 million pay cut, I want incentives that are achievable.
But just think about it. It's a $2.5 million pay cut. But say if they trade him somewhere else or he gets released, it still ends up being the same amount of money. Because if he goes somewhere, and you always talk about this, Willie, getting cash here in pocket rather than as opposed to getting cash in New York or, you know, with the Lions in Michigan.
In California.
Or California, yeah. It's different. You know, they're going to tax you. So you might as well just stay here, take a little pay cut, but you still end up coming out on top. And in Kevin Byard's case, he has, because he's going to get his money no matter what. You know, he's going to get a base salary of 11. He's going to be able to reach his incentives unless something happens to him in regards to injuries. But as we've seen, Byard has been one of the most, you know, reliable players when it comes to availability on that team.
He is very reliable, and $11 million is still very high for a safety. So when we come back, we'll ask the question too, and a lot of people are already weighing in on this on our text line, 615-737-1025. Is the hay in the barn? Is this the Titans team? We'll talk more about this and the buyer deal. If you've got thoughts, reach out to us, call us. We're just getting started here. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace here on this Friday afternoon. And, of course, we're brought to you by the new Zen Sports Sportsbook, the only sportsbook in Tennessee with a cash rewards program. Betting just got better. Download today.
I know there are incentives, but to me, after all of this and all of this discussion in the offseason, it sounds like he took a pay cut.
Yeah, for sure. And without knowing exactly, you know, like what's the nature of the incentives and things like that, for sure, it's a pay cut. I think restructure is not a term that Rappaport should use, because – that's so identified now with just, you know, with restructuring without having a penalty, you know, in the NFL, in the world of the flexible existing cap. One thing about this for sure, I think, is it's coming here at a time with the Titans making a huge signing and then also potentially doing another one, both critical, you know, if they can get George Fant also to help the offensive line. So this seems to be, you know, just timing wise, it seems to be tied to that, which is like we were talking about earlier on the show. It's like that's a time when it's worth a shot, you know, someone in terms of taking a pay cut or whatever, you know, you can do with their contract, because it's like, look, this guy coming in can really help us. And Byard has done previous restructures, but those, of course, were not pay cuts.
Joe Rexroad weighing in with Chase earlier today. Definitely a pay cut, and that is, I think, something that makes me admire Kevin Byard, D-Mace, because it takes some pride. You got to swallow your pride a little bit. It takes a lot of class to come out publicly and say, I am not taking a pay cut. Like, they asked me for a pay cut. It hit me hard. Like, he was very open on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast about this. It was emotional. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, he worked with him, right? You've seen players draw the line, say, yeah, I'm not taking a pay cut, and they stand firm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we don't know what exactly was going through Kevin's mind, what his thought pattern, you know, process was leading up to him deciding, hey, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to go ahead and take the pay cut to help out the team. I don't know what he was thinking, but, you know, they had to get the money from somewhere because you sign in D-Hop, you got to sign a left tackle or right tackle or swing tackle, whatever you want to call it. You still have, you know, small holes that you got to fill. And you brought this up too, Willie. I think the other day, you know, you're pushing yourself so close to the cap, whether you believe the cap's real or not. It doesn't, you know, that's neither here nor there. But you're pushing yourself so close to the cap that if indeed you got to make moves during the season, you're not going to be able to make them. If someone goes down, a couple players goes down, then you have to bring in a guy from another team, practice squad, whatnot. Well, you're not going to have the money or the flexibility, let's say that, to do it. So, you know, Kevin Byard understands that, you know, they're in this window in regards to the old guards. And this should be the question now, Willie, because I thought about this when I saw that KB finally decided to take a pay cut. I'm thinking, what is Vrabel trying to do here? What is Rand Carthon trying to do here? For the last, since the season ended, and they made those big cuts, we were sitting here trying to figure out, are they going through a rebuild? Is this a, you know, a team that's just, you know, trying to hold on? Is this a team that, you know, they know they're not going to make the Super Bowl, but they still want to stay in that winning mode? What are they doing? Well, what I'm slowly believing now is, I believe that coaching staff, along with Rand Carthon, they believe they have a shot, not just to make the playoffs, but advance in the playoffs. Just look at the moves. KB, he finally takes a pay cut. Why? To open up some room, to bring players in. They go and get D-Hop. They change coordinators. This doesn't look like a team that they go out and get Dillard, which, you know, I understand why people are a little bit hesitant about Dillard, because even though he was a first-round guy, he ended up not getting a starting job in Philly, being a first-rounder. I understand that, but the moves that they're making makes me believe that Vrabel thinks and that coaching staff thinks they have a good shot at not just winning the South, but also, you know, being successful in the playoffs once the playoffs start. These are moves and things that they're doing doesn't look like a team that's trying to hold on. You know, that's trying to, we just hope we can win the South or hope we can make the playoffs. The moves that they're making, and I'm sure they're not done. The moves that they're making, to me, signifies a team that still believes that they're in that window with these older guys mixed with the younger guys that they can win.
And I don't know that you can say they are as good a team as they were at their peak during this window, but you can argue that if it goes right, why couldn't they, you know, if they get the maximum from the veteran players one more time, you know, I don't know about a Super Bowl, but yeah, maybe make some noise, surprise some people. 2019, nobody really expected them to do what they did in the playoffs. I referenced this yesterday because I heard the whole thing on my drive back from Atlanta the other night, the Bussin' with the Boys long interview. And you got to wade through a lot of goofing off and stuff like that because that's the genre, right? Mm-hmm. The Bussin' with the Boys podcast. But Taylor Lewan did ask, or it might have been Will Compton, asked Mike Vrabel, who was in a very comfortable setting. They said, look, the term rebuild gets thrown out there. And Vrabel said very matter-of-factly, I believe in this league that you just don't have time to rebuild. And so I do think he is very hesitant to play for 2 or 3 years down the road. I do think Rand Carthon, there are some things that you can point to. The drafting of Levis, et cetera, where they are trying to set themselves up, the way that they've handled the salary cap, but not kicking the can down the road and restructuring again like maybe they would have done. Now, Floyd did it as many times as he could to keep that window open for your great teams, right? And eventually it really hit, and he had to sort of – then they did have to rebuild, right? After you left, there were a couple of really lean years, two or three,
a bunch of them.
Where they just really didn't have a chance going in. I mean, they might as well have been tanking when you get down to it. The word wasn't really used like that back then. But I do see that they're trying to do both. They're trying to give themselves a best chance to win. So what else is out there? We've got some people on the text line that are weighing in about this move. 615-737-1025. One says, Jake, we still don't have the details on the Hopkins deal. So there's some moving parts left. And that is something that they said on the podcast with Butson and Boyd. You notice they have not sent out a release. We have signed D-Hop. They haven't had a press conference. Here's D-Hop. So there's still
something. They've agreed in principle.
They've agreed in terms, but I guess the physical's out there. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they're waiting on, but I still would like to see how they have structured year one versus year two. That will be something to look at. Another texter texts us and says, and he doesn't put his name on there, are they going to address right tackle and the Petit Frere situation for the first six games? Do they bring somebody else in? Is that another thing they could do with this little money that they freed up with Byard?
And I think that's why they are bringing Fant in, the longtime tackle that played it with the Seahawks. He's more of a swing tackle, can go from right to left. I think they're bringing him in this weekend for a workout, and it seems like it's pointing toward them signing him.
We're looking for a hero for six games.
Yeah, they just need someone that can come in. And if he comes in and can do a great job, then, you know, I feel bad for Nicholas, you know, because if he comes in and doing a great job, you can't when Nicholas come back.
Keep it rolling.
Yeah, you keep it rolling and you keep it going. So this team, they're doing things slowly, in regards to this roster. And I think there will be more moves made at the end of training camp, because we got to remember, teams will be cutting players, some veteran players, players taking, you know, potentially help the Tennessee Titans. Titans will be cutting some players, some veteran players once camp ends. So this roster isn't set. I do believe they will bring in at least 2 to 3 new players. Now, will they be impact players? I don't know, but they will be role players. They will serve a purpose on this team. They will add to the depth of this Tennessee Titans team. So Vrabel said, free agency's not over. He said that weeks ago. He said, trust him that they're going to go out and get a receiver. They went and got D-Hop. So we got to trust that this roster isn't finished yet. And, you know, once the season starts, I think this roster will be put together to not just compete for the AFC South, but also compete in AFC, period.
615-737-1025. If you want to weigh in, Kevin Byard has taken a pay cut to free up some money, and the Titans are moving forward. Hit the phones. Text us what you want. We got dad jokes. Ask D-Mace coming up at 12:30. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more here on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. 1025 The Game. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace here on this Friday. Don't forget, the game summer ticket tour is headed to Pringles Smoking Oasis, located at 4901 Centennial Boulevard in Nashville. Today from 2 to 6, come eat, drink, hang, leave with a pair of free Sounds, Predators, Big Machine Music City Grand Prix, or concert tickets. How about that? Just go hang, and you could get some free ticks. Also, get signed up for the grand prize, Titans tickets, Predators tickets, and the 501 Club, and a two-night stay at Opryland Hotel with access to sound waves. Black Tie Moving delivers the game summer ticket tour. For more details, go to thegamenashville.com/tour. Okay, so D-Mace, we've got a couple people on the ticket, the text line, 615-737-1025. Looking at state of the Titans, look, we're getting there. We've almost made it through the whole summer, and training camp's going to be starting here very, very soon. Most of the hay is in the barn. Some details have to be worked out. For example, Joe texts in, D-Hop posted a video saying he's officially signed. Well, if he's referring to the video that I think we all saw, that was just the, I'm going to sign with the Titans. It has not been formalized yet, right? And customarily, we've talked about this week, you have to pass the physical, the press release gets sent out once all the details are done. So it may just be a formality, but for whatever reason, they have not announced the official signing yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we're still trying to figure out why that hasn't happened. Maybe it's, just a few particulars, because obviously the contract still has to go through, the PA and everything else to make sure everything is good. But I don't understand why it hasn't been made official just yet. I don't think there's any walking back on either side, whether it's D-Hop.
It'd be pretty big if that happened. It'd be pretty crazy.
Exactly.
Unusual.
Well, we saw it before with Terrell Owens, when he signed with Baltimore and then, end up sort of getting out of that contract and then signing with Philadelphia. So I think that's the first and the last time I've seen something like that happen. I don't think that's happening. People, that's not happening in this situation at all, I don't believe. But I wonder why the deal hasn't been signed and made official yet.
Tyler texts in, the mayor of Murfreesboro, love that guy. So much respect for Kevin Byard, team player, forever Titan. Can't wait to get a 31 Oilers throwback. They are wearing the Oilers jerseys a couple times this year, right?
Yeah.
Do we know what games they're doing yet?
Do not know. Chase and I had this conversation on the last segment of his show. Obviously, Houston's got to be on the docket, right?
That would make sense. Now, D-Mace, you were playing for the Tennessee Titans when you came into the league, so you're familiar with the Oilers uniforms. One thing I remember about those days, Jeff Fisher, I don't know if this was a team thing or a Jeff Fisher thing, you guys wore the all-whites. You guys didn't go with the Columbia blue jersey.
Yeah, we
were
all white.
You guys liked the all whites.
Yeah, we pretty much.
Was there some reason for that? You guys only wore the blue when somebody sort of forced you to wear the blue.
Yeah, because every game to us was a road game. Every game in 97.
Yeah.
Every game was a road game.
That's
because
for
we
sure.
had to travel to Memphis. Yeah. And whoever came in had more fans than we did. So we considered that an away game. 98, we played here in Vandy. I don't know if we wore the blue then.
No.
I can't remember us wearing the blue at home at all.
And I remember Jeff Fisher just saying, I just don't like the blue. Was one of the things that he said back then. And
it would have been nice to wear the blue, I guess. But
I kind of feel like the blue, it's kind of come back around in style. Don't you think? Like baseball teams that used to wear the In the 70s and 80s, you saw a lot of the
powder blue
road uniform. Mm-hmm. They went completely out of style for a while. Now they're kind of circulating back. If you look at youth tournaments, as I do a lot, you see a lot of those. Like, they're the cool thing to do. The kids like them. It all runs in sort of cycles.
Yeah, I am being a Cardinals fan, I used to watch this VHS tape, kind of digging myself a little bit, a VHS tape of a movie called Heck of a Year with the 82 all the way through the 85 Cardinals, and they wore the powder blues.
They sure did. I remember when they switched to the gray.
Yeah.
Because a lot of teams right around that time were starting to switch because the gray was the more traditional from way, way back. So, we'll see. Mm. We'll see about these Titans, Drew, see if they go with the powder blue. Let's see what else we got. We got a dad joke. Wes and Hermitage, where do bad rainbows go?
Bad rainbows, where do they go? I don't know.
Prism. Prism. Not prison. Prism.
Okay.
Come on, Wes.
I was going to say down the drain. I don't know why I was thinking that, but yikes.
Okay, it is Dad Joke Friday, so yeah, I can get those in on the text line as well. 615-737-1025. So one of the things I was looking at, Jim Wyatt broke down, coincidentally or not, he's been going position group by position group, D-Mace, on the Titans safeties. And one thing that caught my attention, obviously if you got Byard and now you got it resolved and now he's even incentivized, look, if he has a great year, he's going to get paid, and maybe that even opens up the door to play another year. You'd love for that to be the case, that they play so well that they say, run it back, and it'd be very complicated salary cap-wise because you'd have to really address some contracts, right, with the veterans. But that would be a great problem. You've got Byard and Hooker.
Mm-hmm.
We know when those two are on the field, it's a pretty good position for them.
Yes.
But Hooker is at all kinds of problems staying on the field.
Yes.
It just seems like he's always battling something. Jim Wyatt wrote in this, and I hadn't thought about this too much, Elijah Molden is another guy in that category of can't seem to stay on the field. But they've got him working at safety as well as an extra guy. So what do you think of that position group as a whole? I know they like a lot of utility guys, but I also wonder if there's another thing. If you're looking at budget, right, and you're carving out as much cap space as you can to see what's out there, an extra veteran utility safety might be something they're looking for, especially if the injury issues continue with Hooker and Molden.
Yeah, because right now it's Imani Hooker, Kevin Byard. Then you got Josh Thompson and Mike Brown, Jackson and
yeah, a lot of
guys that are just
utility
like,
guys.
Yeah, yeah, like guys we hadn't really heard of, haven't gotten many snaps or snaps, with this team. Period. But I do believe that if these two guys, more importantly, like you said, Imani Hooker, if they can stay healthy, then I think they have one of the better, tandems of safeties in the National Football League because both guys are interchangeable. Both guys can, play free, strong. Both guys can, support in the run. But we understand that KB is that guy. He's the leader back there. But I think because both guys are so versatile, they can do they can do some of the same things. So if they're healthy, then that position is probably the best position on the field for the Tennessee Titans, other than the D-line. Yeah, the D-line's great.
If they're healthy seems to be in every sentence.
Yeah, but it has to be because has happened in the last 2 years.
100%. The defense especially. Like you can start really getting yourself excited if you start envisioning, well, what if Hooker played 15 or 16 games? What if Fulton stayed healthy the entire season?
Heck, what if Caleb Farley ever came on?
Oh man, now we're really talking fantasy world here. If we're gonna get him in there, I mean, you're really reaching. But like, just give me Hooker, Fulton, Landry, Simmons, Autry. The key guys. Just keep them on the field. Guy's gonna miss. He might miss a game here and there.
Yeah.
You're not gonna get perfect attendance by all those guys, especially in these days of the 17 game season. But on that defense, if you just have those guys on the field and you're not decimated with injuries, that could be a really good defense. And I'm not really allowing myself to assume that that's going to happen, but if you start to allow your mind to go there, you can get pretty fired up.
Yeah, you can. And we've been looking at this thing, for the last 3 or 4 months from an offensive prism.
We focused a ton of attention
on the offense. Why? Because they didn't have much depth, in the receiver room. They were still they're trying to figure out the offensive line position. Who's going to be the backup quarterback? Does Derrick Henry, can he go again for another 13, 14, 1500 yards? So a lot of questions up until now have been centered around the offense, and rightfully so. They were, awful last year. In regards to total offense, they ran the ball well. Couldn't pass the ball, no better than we're passing the ball or we could pass the ball. But I think if you look at it, I think a lot of this is going to be predicated on how well the defense plays and how healthy the defense stays. And I want to get into that more. On the other side of the break, because I think that's going to be the tail sign of how this season goes for the Titans, I believe.
Okay. When we come back, we will get into just that. We're taking Titans texts plus dad joke texts, 615-737-1025. Ask D-Mace coming up at 1230. Cole texts in and says, how do you kill a vegetarian vampire?
Man, how?
With a stake to the heart. We're back after this here on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace Dad Joke Friday. We're back here on 102.5 The Game. Ask D-Mace coming up at 12:30. At noon, we're going to play a clip from a great interview we had yesterday with Rick Neuheisel. You see him on CBS Sports on Saturdays talking college football. He's on satellite radio, former head coach at Colorado, former quarterback at UCLA, former receivers coach with D-Mace in Baltimore. And so we had a great conversation with him.
He's an offense coordinator, quarterback's coach. In Baltimore.
Told a great story about D-Mace coming back, a frustrated D-Mace. Do you guys watch film?
Do you guys watch film?
That was a great story. But he got into just the trials and tribulations, the difficulty now about being a head coach or an assistant coach on the college football level with all of the layers that have been thrown at it. Yeah, you get paid pretty well, especially at the top. You get paid great. But it comes at a price, and we asked him, would you want to be a college coach today? We're going to talk about that at noon. In the meantime, we're talking a lot of Titans issues here. Now that Kevin Byard has taken the pay cut, freed up a little bit of cap space, we've talked about some roster needs that if you have a little money in the budget, where could you throw it to try to improve and do those little things trying to win on the margins that might get you that 10th, maybe 11th win that you would need to win the division this year. 615-737-1025. Marty, text this in on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Why don't the Titans get Tannehill to take a pay cut? He needs a good year to continue his career elsewhere. So you think he would take a pay cut for a great receiver or offensive line to protect him? Now, restructure would be a different deal. He makes so much that if you structured it, that kicks the can down the road. You don't want to do this.
Yeah, they
don't want to do that.
Restructure.
The pay cut, I don't know. Could you in theory go to Tannehill like the Tom Brady and say, hey, if you took a couple million less, we might be able to get XYZ?
Well, hell, you're already getting him for a bargain right now at what? He's making
this year? 35, I think. His cap hit anyway.
His cap hit. He may be making a little bit less than that. So you're getting him at a bargain really right now if you're talking about starting quarterbacks. And he's a top 15 quarterback. He's probably sort of in the middle of the pack. And that position is a premium position, so you're going to have to pay for it. It's kind of like gas. You need it, you got to pay for it no matter how high they raise the prices. And that's how it is when you're starting quarterback that has had some success like Ryan Tannehill has.
His cap hit is 36.6. His base salary, according to SpotRack, is 27.
Yeah, that's a bargain. He's not going to want to take no more less money or do a restructure unless it guarantees him money for next season.
Yeah.
And now, the Titans, they can't keep kicking a can down the road in regards to that.
They don't really have the leverage to do it. Now, he would have to do it in the name of a Tom Brady, right? Okay, let's say they went to him and said, Ryan, let's shave off, let's just use what Byard did, 2.5 or 2.6. Move the base salary down that much and you can make it up in an incentives kind of package. Do you think he would take that? I don't know if they've approached him with that. Landry's another guy I think of a guy that you could maybe create a little space that way if you needed it.
I don't think they're going to touch Landry. I would be surprised if they did touch Landry because this is the first year. I believe this will be the first year of the new deal. And he's coming off an injury. You don't want to, add sort of insult to injury, asking him to take a, restructure and take less money and move money around. No, I think if you're going to do that, you wait until after this season, see how he plays, and then you go to him. I want to quickly get back to, the Titans in their defense because I don't think we've talked about this a lot, Willie. This defense over the last 2 years, they've been a good defense, but they've suffered a lot of injuries. But they've managed to still scrap it out and still, keep their team or their offense in a game. I think it's the scheme that they run. I think they're very, you know, detailed in what they do. Guys, you know, guys know their jobs. They do their jobs. They don't worry about doing everybody else's job. You just do your job, worry about your job, and trust that the guy behind you on the side of you, left or right, is doing their job as well. And it's worked for them the last two seasons, even with injury. But this defense, I mean, you know, you got a secondary that has been banged up over the last 2 years. Your D-line is sort of getting up there in age, minus Jeffrey Simmons and Tier Tart. How does this defense – then you're inserting or you're adding a few new guys to a defense, so they're learning as they go. You know, so how long can they continue to sort of stay – in this space that they're in regards to how good they are? Because they were good for a while, and then they took a drop off when Dean Pease left. They took a drop. They dropped off when Dean Pease left.
Yeah.
And Kevin Byard had a bad season.
That first year of the, we don't have a defensive coordinator, but Shane Bowen is in there.
Exactly.
They really dipped.
They took a dip. And then once everybody got really acclimated to what was going on the next following year, Shane Bowen, they bounced back. I'm wondering how long can this defense continue to do the things that they've been doing over the last, say, five seasons, minus that one season with when Dean Pease left. How long can you rely on the defense to hold teams and hold teams and hold teams? I don't know if that can continue. And my thing is, I'm worried about the offense, but I'm not worried to a point where I think, oh my goodness, man, you know, this team, they're going to be bad if the offense doesn't play to the potential we think they
because
play.
We have this mindset today that you have to outscore teams. And when you're playing the Bengals or the Chiefs,
you
figure you're not going to win 17-13, which is sort of – and Mike Vrabel, I still think, believes in that in that style, that you play the complementary football, and if defense is your strong suit and good special teams are there, you can still hold teams in check. And if you run the ball well – it's just harder to do, but it still might be the best way that this team could win, right? If this team is going to win and be successful, it's probably going to be a top 10 defense and maybe an overachieving offense that's just good enough, maybe a middle-of-the-pack offense that's efficient, opportunistic, and gets just enough mileage out of Henry, DeAndre Hopkins, and Tannehill, right? And maybe you get an emerging Treylon Burks to add a little spark or a Chigakonkwo, right? That's the form. That's the blueprint that you're hoping for.
Yeah, because this is a team that ranked in the bottom half in regards to defense.
They really
were good
slipped.
At stopping the run.
But when they were 7-3, before the injuries really took a – you stopped recognizing who the guys were.
Exactly.
Right? But when they were 7-3, I think they were unfolding another year where you were sitting there going, well, the offense isn't great shakes. But they're 7-3 because
of the defense.
The defense is getting some things done.
And what I'm afraid of is not necessarily – I'm not afraid of, you know, Byard and Amani, even though I do want him to stay healthy, and that defensive front, the starters, that defensive front. I'm worried what happens when one of those guys go down. What happens when a Fulton can't play or he goes down? Do they have enough depth and experience that they can keep going? Because I don't think they can do again what they did last year if they have the injuries from a defensive side. I'm saying from the defensive standpoint, because I think eventually, you know, you're going to run out of bodies. And they gave up damn near 300 yards in passing last season. You know, what will they give up if guys go down this season? You know? So I think that's something
they need to watch.
Yeah, that's something we need to watch from a defensive standpoint. Not necessarily the top 11, but what if one or two of those guys go down?
Yeah.
What happens then?
And every team's going to have some of that. The Titans need better luck than they've had. And
because
we'll see,
they rely so heavy on their defense.
Right, and this will be a test of Rand Carthon, too. Can he find those second-level replacement players that are on the street and get mileage at them? Mike Vrabel can do wonders with guys if you find the right guys. But that was something that John Robinson, I think, got some thumbs up for a while, but they hit a point where those guys just could not hold the fort enough. All right, we're coming back. We're going to switch gears. We'll talk about our interview yesterday with Rick Neuheisel on college football in general. It was great stuff. Also, it's Dad Joke Friday. Liam texts in and says, D-Mace, have you heard about the Blind Cyclops Brothers? The Blind Cyclops Brothers.
No, I haven't.
Neither have I. Neither have I.
Neither have I.
Okay, we're coming back with hour number two next.